KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. It'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th, 4 to 6 p.m. at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes and little spares.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of What the Festival, a music and arts festival June 19th through the 22nd at the Wolf Run Ranch in Dufour, Oregon. What the Festival features over 80 electronic and dance artists on four large stages, including artists such as Big Gigantic, Odessa, Rob Garza of Thievery Corporation, Toki Monsta, Thomas Jacks, Tropical Pool Party, Keys and Crates, and the Funk Hunters with Charlie Tuna of Jurassic 5. Again, that's the What the Festival, June 19th through the 22nd at the Wolf Run Ranch in Dufour, Oregon, just 90 miles east of Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. I hate to turn down that beautiful, beautiful music. Start out this Wednesday Talk Radio today, April 22nd, here in inner southeast Portland, right near the Burnside Bridge. My name is Paul Rowland, and this is Talk Radio for today. And we have a very special guest online all the way from across the Pacific, halfway across the Pacific anyway, from Hawaii is Keala Kelly, a Hawaiian filmmaker and journalist who's been documenting the Hawaiian independence movement in the first decade of the 21st century, has made a film, is working on another one about Mauna Kea, the struggle that's going on right now as we speak with protesters occupying the top of the mountain and blocking construction of a mega telescope, I believe the 14th planned for being under construction there on Mauna Kea. Kayla, are you with us?
Hey, hello, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning. Bright and super early for you over there. 3 hours time difference, right?
Yeah, it's dark and it's super early over here.
Dark and early. So I just want to mention that song that I played, Kaulana Napua, literally Famous Are the Flowers, is a Hawaiian patriotic song written by someone whose name there's no way I can pronounce, in 1893 for members of the Royal Hawaiian Band who protested the violent overthrow of Queen Liliuokalani and the Hawaiian Kingdom. And it goes on, this is a Wikipedia entry, and that was a kind of a compilation done, I'm not sure, it was called Project Kuleana. It was a whole bunch of Hawaiian musicians getting together, as you could tell, various different voices compiled together. And I thought that was appropriate since, I guess, in a way, that was kind of a starting point for what we're going to be talking about now, the overthrow of the original Hawaiian government by the United States.
Yeah, that was Kaulana Napua, and it's a beautiful song, and it's actually, I think it's considered the unofficial national anthem of the Hawaiian Kingdom, although the Hawaiian Kingdom had its own national anthem. But yeah, it's a beautiful song, and it resonates even to this day with every Hawaiian I've ever met, and it means, the meaning of the song has to do with a particular line in the song that would translate to mean something to the effect of, we'd rather eat the stones of the land than to be forced to be American. It's a song that's been recorded many, many times and is sung many, many times at Hawaiian gatherings.
I imagine that was the case. Every show I do on something that I'm not familiar with, there is a, I don't know how much of a learning process, because there's so much to absorb. And when you're not immersed in a situation like you are there, it's kind of hard to get all these details, but it's certainly enriching. And of course, you know, since the United States did presume to make Hawaii part of the United States, and being here on the mainland, part of the United States, I guess it's something that we could do some educating on to understand what is the real history. And I know that's something that's really present for you all now. And you know, one reason, you know, I called you yesterday, I had your number because we met at a conference in San Francisco several months ago and we hadn't actually been in touch. I thought, this is something really important that's going on there. There's, you know, it seems to be achieving some high visibility here. I know NPR had a story a couple days ago that we talked about when we spoke on the phone yesterday, that you were rather concerned that the full story wasn't getting out, to say the least. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But the issue of what's really going on, what's really at stake at Mauna Kea is not necessarily getting out. People are, you know, on NPR, they talked about, you know, they had one of the people involved in this telescope project, Canada, France, something. I can't actually wrote down his name. Simon, I think. He's the head of the project. He was saying that he wasn't sure what was different this time, why there's all these protests, all these people out there protesting now, and there wasn't before. And so these are a lot of questions we're going to get into. And if people want to join the conversation, the number is 503-231-8187. So let's, I guess, start kind of from present and go back and then jump back to the present. So tell us the context for this, for what these protests are right now on Mauna Kea.
Sure. The protests taking place right now have been going on for about a month. I'd say about 4 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. And they didn't just begin in the past month, however. The protests over the telescopes on the summit of Mauna Kea have been ongoing for decades. That summit, I just want to say right up front, Mauna Kea, often referred to as Mauna Awa Kea, is considered the most sacred site in Hawaii. And possibly throughout Polynesia, it's one of the most sacred sites. It is about 14,000 feet high above sea level. And so for Hawaiians, we have many, many sacred sites, and also our sacred sites include our burials and places where we had heiau, which would be thought of as temples. So this issue of desecrating sacred sites in Hawaii is not new. This is a problem that we've had ever since settlers came here, ever since the United States took over Hawaii. However, this particular sacred site, because of what it is, because it is one of the highest mountains, it's the second highest mountain, I think, in the Pacific, and it has this incredible spiritual, religious, and cultural resonance for us as a people. It's also been turned into an industrial park by the telescope and the astronomy industry. It's controlled by the state, the quote-unquote state, because we don't even refer to it as a state anymore. We refer to it as the fake state of Hawaii, and in that apparatus, the University of Hawaii controls it. There are already 13 other telescopes on the summit. And on this planet, there are, I think, 24 or 25 of these large array telescopes in the world, and 13 of them are already on Mauna Kea, and two of those 13 are already obsolete. So the attempt and the plan to build this particular telescope is called the TMT, which is an acronym for 30-meter telescope, is something that people have been fighting against since the beginning. I think it started, this particular project started about 8 years ago, and it was soon after the failure of NASA's attempt to put more telescopes up there that were referred to as the Keck telescopes. And that particular project failed after people protested, and also there were lawsuits, and that dragged out for so long that eventually NASA pulled the funding. This project is far worse than all the other telescopes up there put together. In fact, it's larger than all the other telescopes up there put together, and it is not funded by NASA. It is a corporate multinational endeavor.
So just to jump in, you know, I kind of put out a bunch of stuff at the outset, but that the man who spoke on behalf of the project, the consortium, I guess, of Hawaii, France, and Canada that are involved in partly, I don't know how many people are involved in it, but who said that, you know, what's different now, you know, saying basically that the people who are protesting have driven a wedge into the community is the assertion. And I was concerned that the NPR reporter, or I guess the HPR, the Hawaiian Public Radio reporter, didn't actually get another side to the story, didn't ask the protesters the same the question that this man was raising, like, what's different now, as if there had never been a protest. But you're saying there's been protests against telescopes from the very beginning.
Well, that particular, it was so funny when you called me yesterday, because we spoke about that, and I had just listened to it before you called me. And that report is just emblematic of the problem in general with regard to Hawaiian anything, because everything that happens here, this is a very serious situation, not just with this telescope. See, people are hearing about this because hundreds of Hawaiians have come out physically to protest right there on the mountain. And thousands of people are hearing about it all over the world. But Hawaiians are protesting against these acts of desecration and being forcibly removed and erased culturally and forced out economically. I mean, there are multiple ways in which Hawaiians are pushed out of being able to even live in our own homeland. People who say they're surprised by this are simply not paying attention. And when somebody like NPR or Hawaii Public Radio files a report on NPR, and then everybody in the United States hears that report, or everybody who listens to NPR hears it, they're even further misled. This is nothing new. Hawaiians resisting in Hawaii is an everyday reality for us. Just once in a while, the mainstream press will report on it, and then they'll report on it badly. Because as you just said, that reporter didn't bother to include any of the perspectives of the Hawaiians that she was interviewing. And those two particular Hawaiians she was interviewing are formative with regard to how Hawaiians look at what's going on here politically. And the only characteristic that get represented of us are usually us dancing hula, and that's what the whole story was about. Hawaiians dancing hula on Mauna Kea, and Hawaiian flags being waved, and even that was wrong. So there's an intentional manipulation and misrepresentation of what our story actually is, because, and I say that, you know, as kindly as I can, but in the U.S. press, local and national, they're misrepresenting this issue completely, because it is not just an issue of telescopes. It's about the Hawaiian independence movement. And so I was sort of appalled by the way she reported about why Hawaiians were holding their these flags, these upside-down flags. She reported it as if the flags belong to the state of Hawaii. That's the Hawaiian Kingdom flag. So when a Hawaiian holds a flag or wears a flag or waves a flag, upside down or otherwise, that's a direct reference to our independence. It's a reference to the occupation of Hawaii by the United States. So this issue of the TMT on Mauna Kea, if it were only as easy as a cultural issue or an environmental issue, and these are very complex on their own, but it's beyond that. And that's what many of the people protesting, they've gone way beyond this issue of let's just stop the telescope. It's about how did this project ever get to be there in the first place?
So again, before going further back, you know, you talk about what's been going on in the past year with a letter sent to the Secretary of State, John Kerry, asking him to instruct the Department of Justice to explain how and when the U.S. annexed Hawaii, which again goes back, as we start at the outset, from the very beginning of this whole situation, as it might be. But let's, again, start closer to the present and the groundbreaking ceremony, because you said it's been basically a month that there's been this kind of occupation type demonstration going on. But the groundbreaking ceremony started back in, October?
Correct, yes. So there was a groundbreaking ceremony on October 7th, and about 150 or 200 Hawaiians went up to the mountain to intervene and to stop it. That was announced earlier in the summer, and thank you for bringing up the letter to Senator Kerry, because that began, gosh, that's about come May, that'll be a year ago. And I just want to try to connect this up for your audience. The CEO of a state agency called the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, his name is Kamanaʻopono Crabb, he sent a letter last May to Secretary of State John Kerry. And there are a number of things discussed in the letter, but the gist of it is that he was asking the Secretary of State to create some kind of, or to acknowledge even the fact that there is no treaty of annexation. He didn't put it in those words. I'm just, you know, making it as succinct as possible. The request was for the Secretary to instruct, I believe, the Attorney General to show us how it is that the United States came to possess Hawaii, how Hawaii became the 50th state. That wasn't just out of the blue. One of the reasons that that's even an issue at this point is because for over a decade, for about 15, even longer than 15 years, the U.S. has been trying to federalize Hawaiians, indigenous Native Hawaiians, Kanaka Oʻiwi, as a Native American tribe. There's been a push to federalize us. There have been a number of initiatives, millions of dollars spent lobbying for this effort. There was a bill at the beginning of this century referred to as the Akaka Bill, which was the Native Hawaiian Reorganization Act. So there's a lot of pressure to force Hawaiians into having some sort of a quasi-tribal status under the federal government. That's not a history that would make sense for us, because our history is that in 1842, we became an internationally recognized independent nation state on par with the United States. And what took place in the late 19th century was, as you referred to early on in the program, the overthrow of Queen Liliʻuokalani's government. Many things happened 5 years after that event, but by 1898, the United States took control of Hawaii through a congressional act. There was never a treaty of annexation between the Hawaiian Kingdom and the United States. So everything that's taken place since then has been under occupation. Americans have a really hard time hearing that, because they imagine us as being the 50th state. But that just came 60-something, that came about 62 years after the U.S. took control of Hawaii. So our history right now for Hawaiians and for everybody else that's involved, the perpetrators of the crime, our history is that. Our history isn't being American. Our history is being occupied by the United States of America, legally. We're talking about international law. We're talking about a country, the United States, breaking its own laws to take possession of another country. And this was the first place that the United States stepped out in its colonial empire building and took a country that it had international treaties with. People get confused because we're Native people, and they lump us in with other Native peoples of the United States on the continent, but that's not our history here. So when Kamanaʻopono Crabb sent that letter to the Secretary of State, he works for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. That agency, it has made the big push to get us federally recognized. So these things all link up for us. It might have been 122 years ago, but that is not ancient history for Hawaiians at all. That's a blink of an eye. We are culturally, spiritually connected to our kupuna, our elders, our ancestors. I'm talking about my great-grandparents' lifetime. So that is not that long ago for us.
Of course. Just something you said sparked me to, I'm not Native American, so I don't know if I have a right to say this, but I mean, I would, obviously there's probably, you know, there have been certainly in the period when the indigenous peoples of the continental United States were being colonized, they would have considered themselves independent also from the United States. So that's obviously you understand that probably better than I do. Just want to make that that clear when we talk about these things. Yeah.
No, but see, here's the thing, and I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you completely. But here's the thing. When we're talking about international law, when we're talking about international treaties, one of the problems with Americans is a fundamental kind of, like a foundational form of racism, wherein they lump everybody together. Now, yes, we're an indigenous people too. And internationally, we relate to other indigenous peoples in a particular way because we are indigenous. And so we have different kinds of ways of looking at the world, let's say, culturally. But our history also includes, beyond being indigenous, it also includes the fact that we didn't have treaties the way some of our Native American friends had treaties with the U.S., which, by the way, the U.S. broke every treaty that it made with the natives on the continent, and people don't seem to care much about that. But our treaties were different. Our treaties were the same kind of treaties that the United States has with Germany and France and Canada. We didn't just have agreements. We had actual international treaties. We had 80 embassies and consulates throughout the world. The Hawaiian Kingdom was the first non-white nation brought into what was referred to then as the family of nations, but is referred to today as the United Nations. So that's a particular point that people like to gloss over. You know, when people come to Hawaii and they visit Iolani Palace, do they think that's some kind of a decoration? No, it's a palace, because kings and queens lived there. So I wish Americans could understand that when we talk about independence, we're not just talking about it. We don't talk about it the same way that our indigenous friends and cousins in other parts of the Pacific or on the continent talk about it. We're talking about independence because we have this particular history of being internationally recognized and having embassies and consulates throughout the world. That's very different than our indigenous friends or other indigenous peoples on the continent. There are other indigenous countries in the Pacific, countries where they never lost their sovereignty or didn't become occupied. Tonga is one of those countries that comes to mind. But our cousins in Aotearoa, New Zealand, the Maori, they have a very different kind of relationship because they weren't an internationally recognized nation, but they have a very particular relationship with the settlers who came, the British who came and took over their country. So I understand what you're saying, but it is a little bit different once you move into international law. It's a different set of rules that are applying.
Fair enough.
That can be said for all indigenous peoples right now. Indigenous peoples of Africa who don't have a nation state, they're still indigenous peoples, right?
Yeah. I just want to say that we are, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. My name's Paul Rowland, and I'm speaking with Keala Kelly from Hawaii. And we're talking about a lot of things, kind of the tip of the iceberg, or the top of the mountain, as it were, of a much bigger issue. But right now, it's being brought into the international spotlight to some degree. Hopefully this will contribute to that. But Mauna Kea is being occupied by Native Hawaiians who are protesting not the construction, but not just the construction of a major super mega telescope, the 14th telescope on the top of the most sacred mountain, as Kaala was saying, to the Hawaiians and perhaps all of the Polynesian peoples. That's going on right now. And there was a protest, actually. I didn't know about this, but in solidarity with Mauna Kea, happened Sunday, April 12th at Director's Park. I don't know if any of our listeners were there and or are Native Hawaiian or just or know about this issue or interested and want to ask questions. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And I guess that was an international time to express solidarity with Mauna Kea. And we do have one caller who's been waiting so patiently for, 10 minutes or so. James, are you still there?
I am still here.
Great. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually talking about that international solidarity. The one of the people who was there is the teacher at the Halau, the Ke Kukui Foundation. Her name is Diva Yamashiro. She's an excellent hula teacher. I studied with her for a short time along with my fiance. The issues of Hawaiians, of the Hawaiian people, once you start to read about them, you realize that it's really... It's just a repeated process that colonial British and their offspring just keep replicating throughout the world. The Hawaiian people have endured so much. They've endured so much over the over the last 150, 200 years. It's ridiculous. It's so good that these things are being brought to light. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like we may have not been able to act in time to save other indigenous people from the same thing happening, but we have such a short time frame right now. It's still close enough to the occupation that we can still save the Hawaiian people from what colonial powers have done to them. I mean, they've been so lucky to have preserved their culture through oral history and dance. I mean, Mesoamericans barely have anything left of their culture.
Generalizations here, but maybe we could get Kaala to jump in.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I agree. The United States and the citizens of the United States, who know very little about the actual history of Hawaii, and that's because lies have been told to them for over a century, and a whole narrative has been built up around this fantasy of Hawaii rather than the reality of Hawaii. I mean, 8 million
yeah.
people a year come to Hawaii to have a fantasy vacation. And, you know, here's one of the things. People need to understand, when you're talking about a tiny little place like Hawaii, this is the most isolated peopled archipelago on the earth. It's little. We have finite resources. When you have 8 million people coming over here and taking over, basically that's hundreds of thousands of people between them and the military who are here. We have the largest military command in history on the island of Oahu. Try to get your mind around that. Oahu is only about 640 square miles. This is a tiny place. And we have everybody else in here. Imagine the environmental destruction. Is it any surprise that we have the largest concentration of endangered species habitats per square mile than anywhere else on the planet? Is it any surprise that because of the military outpost that's been built up here, the Obama administration has been able to expand further its military, the U.S. military, throughout the Pacific? You know, we're used as everybody's fantasy and military, you know, staging area, and where that we have the largest concentration of open field genetically modified organism test sites in the world. This tiny little place that the Hawaiian people are from, that is our homeland, is inundated with the corporate, political, interests of the United States and the rest of the world. So I agree with what the caller said, that, you know, there is a, we can, Americans can come to terms with the actual history of Hawaii and support Hawaiians who are calling for the deoccupation of Hawaii and have been for a long time, peacefully, I might add. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was saying for sure. I think that the biggest problem with coming to terms with the real history of Hawaii is that they would have to come to terms with the real history of Native Americans and African Americans, because a lot of the same missionaries that were involved with suppressing the hula in Hawaii were the same missionaries over here suppressing the beliefs of the Native Americans and the African American slaves. So they would have to rethink not only the Hawaiians, but they'd have to rethink everything else that has been considered peaceful or considered just the norm.
Well, thank you so much for calling, James. All right.
Thank you so much for calling, James.
All right. And have phone lines open. So this is your chance to talk directly with Keala Kelly, who's a Hawaiian filmmaker and journalist who's covering the what's going on now on the ground in Hawaii, the sovereignty movement and the movement to stop the construction. And so the construction is actually currently halted, right? There's a moratorium at present?
Yes, there is a moratorium. And I just want to back up to something you said earlier, right before you took the call, with regard to Hawaiians who are occupying on Mauna Kea. The truth is, Paul, and I know that word's an interesting word the past couple of years, the way it's used, because of the Occupy movement. But in Hawaii, the occupiers are everybody but the Hawaiians. The Hawaiians who are on Mauna Kea are protecting it. They're protecting the mountain from the occupiers, expanding their occupation of the summit. So I just wanted to make that, switch that a little bit, because we don't see ourselves, I mean, some people don't even see themselves as protesters. Now, politically, that's sort of a complex conversation that has to go on around that. But most of us, you know, or like anybody who goes out to protest something, it's because we're trying to protect something. We're trying to change something. So everybody who's gone to Mauna Kea the past month, and everybody who's been standing vigil on Mauna Kea, they're there to protect it from this behemoth monstrosity of a telescope, which is massive, by the way. It will take up an 8-acre footprint on the summit. It won't go where the old telescopes are. It won't even go where the obsolete telescopes are. No, no, no. They're going to go where nothing's ever been before. Nothing's ever been up there except for some sacred sites that Hawaiians have built over the centuries, and some of which still are up there. Now, Hawaii has always used the summit in a very, very specific, particular way because it's sacred. It was never a place to go and hang out and have a party. So what's been going on the summit the past month is, with regard to this telescope, is that they've been moving in their heavy equipment, getting ready to start digging up 2 million cubic square feet of the summit to truck it out, to make room for their telescope. So they can't do it right now because the ground is too hard, because it's really cold up there. But the actual building hasn't begun yet, which is why the movement right now to stop it, this is why it's so important. It hasn't happened yet. And people are being told it's a done deal, it's a done deal, it's a done deal. Nothing's happened yet. They weren't even able to do their groundbreaking ceremony on October 7th because a number of us stopped that. So they haven't actually been able to start their project yet. Now's a perfect time. It's a perfect time for them to get out of it. It's the perfect time for them to stop the project because they haven't actually started it yet.
So we have a couple other callers. I did want to just say I appreciate your making that clarification about my terminology. I will say that I did, on the website, use the term reoccupation instead of occupation.
Correct, yeah. There is some of that going on up there. And it's actually a beautiful thing that Hawaiians are doing there. There's so much educating going on. There hasn't been anything like this. This is, you know, to go back to the man who was interviewed in the NPR story, he's so surprised to see this kind of a reaction, although it's been building for a while. It is actually different than just about anything else that's ever happened here. There hasn't been this kind of solidarity between different Hawaiian groups, within the Hawaiian community, since maybe ever. The last thing to compare it to would be when Hawaiians back in the 70s started to occupy the island of Ko'olawe to stop the bombing of it, because the U.S. had been using it and did use it for 50 years as a bombing target. The United States and actually many other countries throughout the world that come here every other year during RIMPAC used Ko'olawe as a bombing target. That island has been rendered unlivable. They broke the water table. There will never be fresh water on that island again. Nobody will ever be able to live there again. And that, by the way, the island sits between Molokai and Maui and Lanai, so it wasn't like it was so, you know, far away from, you know, the populated areas of Hawaii. So this issue I want to say about Mauna Kea, I know we have some callers, but I want to say one more thing. Environmentally, Mauna Kea is incredibly fragile. It might be a giant, huge mountain, but it's also where the largest freshwater aquifer of that island is located. So anything that could contaminate the freshwater supply of the island of Hawaii should be left untouched. People shouldn't be building on top of it. People shouldn't be doing toxic things on top of it. So it's not just a cultural issue or a spiritual issue. It has real serious environmental implications to build anything on that summit.
Yeah, I'd like to, I had mentioned when we met that I had been involved in peripherally to some extent in the fight against the telescopes on Mount Graham in Arizona, which has some similarities to what's going on there. In fact, I know there's been solidarity expressed, and the whole issue of the clash of worldviews is probably something is really, really difficult in this context to really get into. Also because I am not from a indigenous perspective. I have been allowed to sort of get a glimpse and participate to some degree in it. So I think I understand it maybe more than the average American. But, the whole, like when the Apaches who were fighting, because that was their sacred site as well, were, you know, accused of being anti-science and obscurantists and all these things. And anyway, it's a big issue, and it needs to be brought out, because this whole clash of worldviews is exactly the clash that occurs when colonization occurs, and it has many, many different facets. But let's—I know you probably want to respond to that as well, but we do have a couple callers.
I absolutely want to really quick before the caller.
Yeah.
I just want to say there is a film called Temple Under Siege, and it was made about 12 years ago, I think, by Namaka Okaina, and it's actually, and I believe there's. As I recall, Mount Graham is actually in the film. There are connections between, at that time, what people were trying to stop on Mauna Kea, which was the Keck, which I mentioned earlier. And that film is actually online. People can actually see that film on YouTube. And I want to also mention that my film, Noho Heva, is on Vimeo right now for free. So if people want to understand what's already gone on with Mauna Kea, they should see Temple Under Siege. And if they want to understand why Hawaiians are making the argument for the protection of Mauna Kea, they should see Noho Heva. And both of these things are available on the internet right now.
And that's Noho Heva, and that's www.nohoheva.com. I have that all this information is on the website, on the KBOO.fm website under the page for this program, Wednesday Talk Radio. Actually, it's Why the Mountain. I hadn't really talked about that, but we will have a chance. We still have some time to talk about your new project, which has to do specifically with Mauna Kea. But let's go to a caller. John, okay. You're on the air. Go ahead. Hello? John? Oh. Okay, let's try Jack. Are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. The previous caller is talking about getting people to rethink things. I think there's been a lot of rethinking already done, and in recent years, the success that Native Americans have had has come through their legal efforts, their efforts to get a new legal footing vis-a-vis the United States government. So my question to your guest is this: is there an aspect to this movement that will ultimately lead to legal confrontation with the United States government so you can have some real substantive success. The protests, of course, are good for raising awareness and all of that, but we know usually what happens in the end, the powers that shouldn't be prevail. So what's afoot? What's the direction of the movement in terms of substantive results?
That's an excellent question, and thank you for asking it. There have been suits filed, and there are appeals in motion right now within the U.S. system to stop this telescope. And the arguments that are being made there, they're really profound, and they're really based on laws that are already in place that are supposed to protect the mountain, specifically conservation land that should be protected because it's been designated conservation land. The summit has been designated conservation land, but because the state, through the University of Hawaii, controls it, they have found, quote-unquote, legal ways to open it up for development. Like I said, I don't say this lightly. When I say it's an industrial park up there, I'm not joking. There are already 13 telescopes up there. This particular telescope, you have to get a visual on this, is the size of a football stadium. It is massive. So they've already broken their own laws in order to make it okay for this $1.4 billion project that's being funded, by the way. This part of the project is being funded by the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation. Gordon Moore is the founder of Intel. So this is money coming in from Silicon Valley and also from Caltech and from the University of California system. This is their project coming into our world. This is not a project that that originated here. So there's that aspect of the legal actions that are being taken. And then more interesting to your with regard to your question is what's taking place internationally. Now, Keanu Tsai, Dr. Keanu Tsai, he has a PhD in political science, has been very active with regard to taking the Hawaiian Kingdom argument to the international courts. He's been doing this for 15 years, more than 15 years. And recently, he's been making headway in Switzerland. And just, I think, probably 3 or 4 days ago, a Swiss federal criminal court agreed to hear a case on war crimes committed by the United States in Hawaii. Now, I know when we hear war crimes, we think Nuremberg, we think Holocaust. But there are many, many other war crimes other than just the crime against genociding a people into oblivion. The war crimes specifically that Keanu has been taking to the international arena is with regard to something called pillaging. And under that term of pillaging is illegal taxation. The United States has been illegally taxing Hawaiians, Hawaiian Kingdom subjects, descendants of Hawaiian Kingdom subjects. And everybody else in Hawaii for the duration. And that's illegal under international law, and it falls under war crimes. So I understand, like I said, I understand when people hear that, those words, war crimes, they think of something very specific having to do with World War II. But there are many, many different types of criminal activities that fall under that. So that's actually happening right now. People can go online and find references to this. There was an article, and I think I want to say the name of the newspaper in Switzerland is NZZ. I'm sure it has some German name that I just can't get my mind around at 5 a.m. But it's a pretty good article. So I would recommend that people look into that. Also, there's a Hawaiian Kingdom blog. So if you just even Google Keanu Tsai or Dr. Tsai, you're going to find all of this material. He keeps everything online. It's actually, he has a fairly transparent way of presenting his research.
Yeah, I don't have all that up on the website, but I will update the page I created after this program with the things you mentioned.
Yeah, and I'll send you all that stuff, Paul. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to send it to you yet.
Okay, and so we do have one more caller. Before we go to them, I just want to flag something I was hoping you would address, because you started talking about this letter that was sent to Secretary of State Kerry about explain the circumstances of the U.S. takeover of Hawaii over 100 years ago. But then you said in this note you sent to me that a couple things happened as a result of that, which I don't think you got into. So let's hold that until we talk to this caller.
Okay.
BJ, you're on the air.
Thank you. I like to go to Hawaii and get my law degree reestablished there but I'm a senior up in age, 75 plus a few years. This is an issue that really should be taken together. And we need to get everyone together on this. Because since 9/11, the U.S. military has taken over all kinds of places, 300 bases, 300 forts. Hawaii was the first. This is wrong. Not asking the American people anything about it. Just going ahead and taking it over. Now I want to ask you a question. Is there any title on this land where they used escrow? Did they go through the courts to get this done?
Gosh, you've got some good callers over there, Paul. That's a great question. That's the substantive argument that's being made against this telescope, because the summit of Mauna Kea, all of Mauna Kea, and about half of the Hawaiian archipelago is the crown and government land of the Hawaiian kingdom. And through a series of illegal maneuvers that predated and then postdated the U.S. takeover, that all of that land was scooped up and taken control of and is now referred to as quote-unquote ceded land, but it was never ceded. So this, when we call this an occupation, it's because nothing here was ever ceded. They've just been occupying illegally. So the basis for arguing against the 30-meter telescope is that that's actually the crown and government land of the Hawaiian kingdom, and the so-called state has no right to lease it out or build on it or do anything with it. And Hawaiians have been making the argument to get to deoccupy based entirely on the fact that they don't have title to these lands. In fact, Keanu, I'm going to go back to what Keanu, the work he's been doing, even 20 years ago, he was already doing the kind of work where he was calling this issue of title into question. There is no title to any of this land. It's just been occupied by the United States and by American settlers and other foreigners. So without title to the land, nobody has any right to do anything to it. The only ones who have title to this land are the descendants of Hawaiian Kingdom subjects, which, by the way, 90% of those people, or a little more than 90%, are of Native Hawaiian ancestry or Kanaka Oʻiwi ancestry. But there were others here, descendants of missionaries and others, who were also citizens of the Hawaiian Kingdom. So it wasn't an ethnic country.
Mm-hmm. So, BJ, do you have any other points to make? Oh, he's gone. We have Elise on the line. Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Hi. Morning. So I was born and raised in Hawaii, and I guess I had a question. I'm not Hawaiian, but I've always seen the issue of like Native Hawaiian rights as more of a justice thing that I've always been really passionate about. But something I've always wondered, like you said, the stuff with Mauna Kea is the first time in a long time that Hawaiians have stood in solidarity about something. Outside of that, what is it that, differs different fractions of Hawaiians from each other that they rarely come together on things, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Sadly, I know exactly what you mean. It's we're divided people, but that's by design. That's not, and I don't mean genetic design. That's by American design. That's by state design. We've been divided just on this issue of whether or not we should be a federally recognized tribe, because many Hawaiians have assimilated into the American system by force, by the way, which is another war crime, by the way. To denationalize a people is also a war crime. We have to go back to the beginning of the 20th century and remember that the takeover led to the almost death of the Hawaiian language, because the Hawaiian language was taken out of all the schools. It was taken out of all government transactions. People were forced to learn English. So there are many things that have been going on for over a century that have created a division between Hawaiians. I think there's an assumption that Hawaiians are all supposed to get together and just shake hands and agree that, yes, we're good, America bad. It isn't that easy to divide a people, to undo a people, to diminish a people, takes a lot of work, a lot of effort on the part of the people doing that to us. So what we're dealing with right now is a kind of healing, really, that's going on around what's happening with Mauna Kea. Many of us, even people who are pro-federal recognition, we're all coming out for this. This is an extraordinary time in our history because this is an extraordinary moment. But we have to stand up for this as a people. So in that sense, it's a really great experience. It's sad that we have to do it, but there's a kind of joy to it. It's like a joyous revolutionary spirit in the wind, in the air right now. You can feel it. And we're all coming together, even though politically we might not agree on other things. We're coming together as a people because we do love this place. All Hawaiians, even people from Hawaii who aren't Hawaiian, like yourself, Elise, love this place. This is a place where the word aloha is a philosophy, an ideology. It's not just a tourism industry slogan.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling. And we only have 10 minutes left. The time flies on this program. I want to let you know that coming up at 9 on Political Perspectives, Sarika Mehta hosts a discussion about how the deaf community in India is fighting for the rights to language equality. And at 9:30, we'll hear an interview with author Robert Marston Fanny, who writes a blog about climate change called Robert Scribbler's Blog. Huh, I just found that the other day on the internet. We also want to thank all of our KBOO members who have expressed their support financially for our station and in other ways. And if you are not a current member, you can always become one so easily by going to kbo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. So, we've got two callers, but let's address that question because, you know, you keep talking about federal recognition. And, you know, in your note to me, you did say that two things happened after that letter was sent. The State Department removed its narrative about how Hawaii became part of the U.S. Well, you just go ahead. You're the one who said it. So talk about what happened immediately after that letter and sort of got tied in, I think, to this what's happening on Mauna Kea.
Yes, it did. I mean, there were many other events over the past decades that have led up to this moment in our history. However, yes, about a year ago when Kamanaʻo Pono Crabbe sent the letter to the Secretary of State, the letter was never acknowledged, by the way, but what that did was it lit up what's happening here right now, because within weeks, the Obama administration called for Department of Interior hearings to be held in Hawaii, literally within weeks of that letter. And so DOI people came to Hawaii and held hearings throughout the archipelago.
That's Department of Interior.
Yeah, the Department of Interior.
Which is ironic. Ironic that it's called Department of Interior, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We're very exterior to the United States. But they came here, and what they did was they got an earful from Hawaiians saying, we do not want to be federally recognized. We're Hawaiian, and we would like you to get out of our country. That was really the refrain. Polite, but consistent. And then within a couple of months of that, Professor Williamson Chang sent a letter to the DOJ, to Attorney General Holder, again bringing up this issue of war crimes, saying that this should be looked into. That kind of created a momentum as well. As all of this is going on, what's going on with Mauna Kea is also unfolding at the same time, because the attempts to stop it legally in the U.S. courts were failing. And so the discussion about the date was set to have a groundbreaking ceremony. So a number of us, like I said, weren't going to let that happen. So multiple things are happening simultaneously as the federal government is trying to federalize us. Hawaiians are awakening to our actual history and our actual rights as a people and as a country to say that, you know, to call for deoccupation. So Mauna Kea became like a flashpoint so that people can see that something's happening in Hawaii. They might not understand it because everything I'm telling you, I'm sure most of your listeners have never heard of. But this is our reality. Our reality is not what's perpetrated through commercials, through the tourism industry, through the U.S. government, through the interests of settlers. Our reality is the history that I've been talking about with you this morning. Our reality is that of a country that wants the United States to get out of it, wants it to move towards deoccupation.
So we got, a couple callers and precious little time left, so let's go to one of those. Harry, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have two ironic comments. We complain about China annexing Tibet, and they annexed Tibet in 1959, and we annexed Hawaii in 1959. And so the Chinese always put that issue up there, but we never hear about that. The next ironic comment is when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor in 1941, their idea was to free Hawaii and to free the Philippines. They were successful in freeing the Philippines because the Philippines became their own nation. Well, that's my comment.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Harry. I just want to say a couple of things about what Harry just brought up. And this actually goes right to the misinformation or the campaign of mis and disinformation. Hawaii was never annexed. That's the issue here, actually. There was never a treaty of annexation. Hawaii was never annexed. It's just called annexed, but it was never annexed. If there were a treaty of annexation, Paul, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation right now. There is no treaty of annexation. That's why it's an occupation. And also, and thank you, Harry, for bringing up this issue of Pearl Harbor. Again, the American narrative, the master narrative of Hawaii, makes that seem like that was something for Hawaiians. No, America, the reason that the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor was because it was bombing the military installations of the United States. It wasn't attacking Hawaiians. It was attacking the military installations of the United States. Those are here because of the illegal overthrow and illegal occupation of Hawaii. That's why those installations are here. In addition to that, I have to say this because he brought up the word, he said the Philippines. One of the reasons that the United States took control of Hawaii was because it was in what was referred to as the Spanish-American War. And in 1898, it was trying to supposedly fight the Spanish for the Filipinos. But what that turned into was a genocide perpetrated by the United States in the Philippines, wherein at least 1 million Filipinos were murdered. Because after the United States went to war with the Spaniards, then it went to war with the Filipinos. So there's nothing about liberation out here in the Pacific. When it comes to the United States, they're not here to liberate. They're here to dominate. And that's the actual history of Hawaii in the Pacific, not the master American narrative that makes it look heroic. Ours is a history of colonization and occupation throughout the region.
Let's go to one more caller and then have some final comments. Go ahead. Phil, you're on the air.
We should note that the purpose of this telescope is absurd. It's stupid. The notion that the universe has edges that you could see some big bang beginning is insanity. Infinity is infinity. There are no edges.
Okay.
That's actually a wonderful comment, and I'm glad that somebody said that. It is about, that is the argument that's made for this telescope, is that you'll be able to see back to the beginning of time. As if they know where, if we knew where the beginning of time was, we wouldn't even have to talk about looking for a telescope. But I want to say this one last thing about Mauna Kea. For us, that place is our origins. You see, our creation story as a people begins with Waikea and Papa. So Mauna Kea or Mauna Awa Kea is the location for our creation story, the Kumulipo. We have several creation stories, but It's ironic to us that they're trying to look for their origins on top of our origins.
Yeah, I had this. You have this wonderful clip that I was hoping to air, but in the middle of the program, I realized there was a swear word that we can't say on the air in that clip that you put up on your website. So we couldn't hear it because I hadn't edited that.
Oh, you're talking about Skippy Iwani.
Yeah. But he was making a kind of a parallel point about the, you know, that if you challenge, if you make these kind of challenges that you're making directly to people, confront them on the real history, he says they'll want to punch you in the face. And he says it's because they can't confront their own, you know, loss, I guess, of he says, of spirit, or, you know, that they failed to maintain their own spirit. And these are, throwing that out at the very end of the program is kind of unfair. We have a minute left, but you know, our spirit, but our you know, it's a really deep issue. So go ahead, I'll give you the final word because we really have to get out here in a minute.
Sure. Well, thank you for bringing that up because perhaps people will look up the film, Why the Mountain, the making of the movie. That's our Facebook page.
And they can go to the Facebook page, or they can go to whythemountain.blogspot.com, and they can find links to what you're talking about, because I do have that clip from the film, and it's a beautiful way that he speaks about it. But I'd love it if people would go and check that out, and also check out my actual documentary that's up online right now called No Hava. And so, perhaps some of the people in your audience will want to support the making of this film.
So it's in progress right now as we speak. You're making the Why the Mountain film as this struggle unfolds, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I've been working on it since December.
Okay, well, the music to end the program has come up. I want to thank you, Keala Kelly, so much for being with us.
And, what a pleasure, Paul. Mahalo nui for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
All right. And as I mentioned, there's links to everything I said. There's links to what we mentioned, her websites, other websites. There's a local Hawaiian culture organization that is on there. And thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned to more good programming here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Paul Rowan. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. Brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans.